Blog Talk Radio.
Nicholas Brusso. Would you like to say hi, Nick?
I would. Hello.
Concise as always. We left off last week talking about recreational drug use in the sort of Mick Jagger rock star sense. I think we were actually talking about art, but our conversation about sex sort of led to a tangent on recreational drug use and these sorts of things. So we'd like to pick up there this week, sort of give ourselves a break from that conversation. Basically, what we want to talk about is drug use, how it relates to things like personal rights and liberty, and sort of start discussing how we should think about the ethics behind drug use and related activities. So, Nick, I know you like to start shows by clarifying terms and, you know, being careful and specific. So what exactly are we talking about here? I mean, are we talking about recreational drugs? Is there a working definition we'd like to start with? Maybe an Oxford definition?
Yeah, I have the Oxford English Dictionary definition in front of me, which is an excellent dictionary. It tells you where the word was first used and how it was used. And so the first definition it offers, it says, any substance of animal, vegetable, or mineral origin used as an ingredient in pharmacy, chemistry, dyeing, or various manufacturing processes. A natural or synthetic substance used in the prevention or treatment of a disease, a medicine, also a substance that has a physiological effect on a living organism. This definition seems to be more broadly than in the context of which I think we were using the term drugs. And I say this because if you were to look at it from any substance that has a physiological effect on a living organism, then we would have to include all of food and water and all the things that we do to sustain our existence. And so this, although does have an interesting kind of tangential point, I guess, is, you know, does food have drug-like qualities? You know, we have a very large fast food industry and a large amount of people who consume a lot of fast food, my roommate being one of them. He probably eats it six times a week, maybe seven, you know, hits it every day. Surprisingly, he is in good shape, but I think that's because he just works out all the time. In any case, it seems like food can also have the same relation that drugs have, in that you can use food to benefit your body and to feel healthy and to encourage the likelihood of your health persisting, whereas simultaneously with drugs, you can use them to treat disease or particularly illnesses to facilitate you getting better and also having sustained health. That also works oppositely. Suppose that you eat fast food every single day, three meals a week. That movie Super Size Me, if you haven't seen it, kind of goes and shows just how bad fast food can really be for you if you were to live on a fast food diet. At the same token, we all have heard the horror stories about different kinds of drugs and the adverse effect it has on the body. So I don't know how to exactly differentiate these two points between drugs and food. So I'm going to kind of flip it back on you and say, so we have a definition of drugs, and it doesn't seem clear how to distinguish it from the way I think in which drugs are commonly used, and the more broad definition that the Oxford English Dictionary has supplied for us.
Well, I think the only route I could really take is sort of like conversational acceptance. And I think all I can really say on that note is that in my mind, you know, when we talk about drugs, whether it be cocaine or whether it be, you know, acetaminophen, in my mind, those are things, you know, that alter us physiologically, but in an optional sort of way, if that makes sense. Is like an, no, I don't want to say unnecessary, but it's something that we don't necessarily need, perhaps. There's an interesting distinction to be made, too. You were talking about, you know, the difference between nourishment or asking, you know, if food could constitute a drug. I know a conversation that the FDA engages in regularly is the difference between a supplement and a performance-enhancing drug, because I know there can be a very fine distinction there between something like anabolic steroids, for example, which most people want to call a performance-enhancing drug, and, for example, like nitrous oxide, which I believe is currently a supplement, but it helps boost muscle mass. So, you know, even among professionals, this is a tricky topic, presumably professionals. But in my mind, I think at least conversationally, we're talking about drugs. I think we're talking about things that aren't necessary, you know, things that we use to either correct a problem or we use situationally, if that makes sense. Maybe I'm headed bad, down a bad path there.
No, I would agree with you. And so the distinction of you said that you want to classify drugs then also as drugs that we use to make ourselves better. So like acetaminophen, you'd still consider a drug.
I think so, yeah. I think it clearly is.
And to me, it seems like so long as you're using acetaminophen for its intended use, you know, you get a headache. Suppose that you don't have headaches that happen regularly every single day, so you're taking, you know, half a bottle of acetaminophen a day. But suppose, like, once a week you get a headache and you take some acetaminophen, it cures you of your ailment, then it seems like that drug is helping you kind of live your life optimally. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Well, I also think there's... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, there I can see a potentially catastrophic counterexample for the distinction I'm trying to make. You know, you could argue that there are people who, for whom, you know, a drug is completely necessary. Like, the one I can think of off the top of my head is someone who is epileptic. You know, you could say in their case that not taking the drug affects them in such a way that it is completely necessary. Or, better yet, you know, I don't want to say lactose intolerance, but it's not hard to imagine someone who, you know, can't metabolize food properly and needs a drug to sustain himself. You know, then the distinction becomes less clear again. Well, is it a drug or is it food? But in my mind, necessity seems to make a difference, you know, that like food and water are things that are, you know, perfectly necessary, 100% necessary. Can't survive without them, whereas aspirin, you might say, isn't. Then again, you know, someone with a heart problem, aspirin might be a necessity. I don't know.
Well, what I see kind of off in the distance that we're kind of starting to push towards is we've been focusing on one end of the spectrum where it seems that people, there's this end of the spectrum where people need drugs to sustain their existence. You know, you said an epileptic person who has Crohn's. I'm not
right.
100% on how many, you know, but there's several diseases out there and ailments that people have that need drugs in order to sustain their existence. And then as we get further away from that, we start seeing the acetaminophen. So it's like I have a headache, so it would be nice. You know, my existence isn't dependent upon this drug, but, you know, you're kind of in the middle line between needing it and just wanting it.
Right.
And then I think on the complete opposite end of the spectrum is kind of the connotation I think drugs often take, which is this idea that you're taking a drug to get a specific experience, a specific high or buzz or altered state, whether that is emotional, cognitive, or some sort of physical sensation. And those kind of drug use, as you kind of mentioned in the outline or the beginning of the show, is the idea of recreational drug use. And so it seems like on one end you have the recreational drug use, and on the other end you have the use of drugs for the need, the bodily need. Is that fair to kind of put out like that?
Yeah, they certainly seem to be polar opposites. You know, when I think of a person who is, you know, for lack of a better term, a pothead, you know, versus someone who has Crohn's disease, you know, and takes some sort of injection to metabolize their food better. In my mind, those seem like very different reasons for taking a drug. They seem like polar opposites, but even that, you know, could get dicey. Things like glaucoma right. and the like.
Yeah, and then asking the question, well, you know, if it's, you know, hard to eat, you know, maybe marijuana makes them a little hungry, so the marijuana supplements the injection that somebody would take for a particular ailment.
Right.
So, in any case, I think the reason why the recreational drugs get such a negative connotation, as you said, for lack of a better word, pothead, is that we have these kind of categories of different people who use different drugs, alcoholics, you know, being one of them, and
mm-hmm.
these have very negative connotations with them, and I'm not even sure that they're connotations. I think they would just be like straight illnesses or addictions.
I think in, you know, modern age, we view them that way, as addictions or illnesses.
So is an addiction by necessity bad?
My knee-jerk reaction is yes, you know, but I'm not so sure. I mean, I'm addicted to food, right? That's probably not a very good example. But I think the medical terminology could easily apply. You know, it's something that even psychologically I can't live without, you know. To go
right.
without it completely ruins my mental state.
Like, you know, or suppose that you were, you know, addicted to helping people out or to doing your job of masonry or something like that. It doesn't seem like this addiction has the negative effect that, you know, one would associate with alcoholics or stoners, as they would put it. But, you know, on the same token, kind of ask the question, like, so if somebody was addicted to a particular job, stick with masonry, and it was having such a negative impact on their life such that they were unable to really address other issues going on in their life because they were so consumed by their work, you know, let's say they worked 80 hours a week and they would just come home and sleep. As a consequence, the kids would be neglected. Say the wife leaves him, you know, and he's still just addicted to this job. It seems then in that case that it has that addiction could serve a negative end.
Yes. The only point I have in response to that, I guess just to prove, if we haven't already, this is a complicated issue, I can think on the opposite side, you know, someone who is addicted to their work, for like a human rights organization, or maybe like, let's just pretend some fictional character, you know, toils his life away to create a national food bank or something like that. You know, in those cases, we might see that person being so absolutely caught up in their work that they lose sight of family and other commitments such as this. I think we'd still have a hard time saying that was necessarily a bad thing. It'd be a tough call, right? Because in that case, you know, his or her addiction could result in the end of world hunger or something to that effect, or, you know, the cure for cancer. While it might have decidedly negative effects in the short run, is it really a bad thing? I'm not so sure. So I guess I'll just throw that out there. We actually have a couple of callers, so I think we'll let them enter the conversation and see what they say, see if this conversation takes a new direction. Caller, welcome to the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, may I ask who's calling?
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello, caller, are you there?
Okay, I think we're having some issues there, so we'll go ahead and move on to the next caller. Caller, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mike, how you doing?
Not too bad, how are you?
All right. Drug use, liberty, yep. I believe anybody's taking drugs, if they're doing it, not harming anybody else, and if they're harming themselves, that's their prerogative.
Well, I think that's sort of an underlying question we're heading to here. I mean, what are the underlying ethics of drug use, you know? What constitutes good drug use or bad drug use, or how do we tell the difference? And your perspective is that even recreational drug use isn't inherently bad, or something like that, right? As long as
you're right.
Harming other people?
That's those are the parameters. If they're not harming other people, if you want to get drunk within your own house, if you want to take drugs and get into a stupor within your own house and you're not bothering anybody else, that's your business, and nobody should interfere.
Okay. I think you have a very American view of sort of negative rights there, and I think many people would be inclined to agree with you. But you'd say, you know, even someone who is so absorbed in alcoholism that they're destroying their own life, I mean, you'd say that it's not your place to intervene?
Well, you can, but if the person wants to refuse your help, then, you know, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. But it's also your right not to intervene. Now, for example, myself, I wouldn't be a good Samaritan anymore. I've been a good Samaritan, and I've wondered how come I haven't been hurt, and I'm not going to press my luck. So if people get into situations where they're harming themselves and they need intervention, it's good for people to intervene. But if the victim wants to refuse that help, then you leave them alone.
But in terms of legally of what societal institutions offer, it should be a legal right of an individual to basically kill themselves with drink or any number of drugs. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it should be a decriminalized right. I don't want any type of legality one way or the other. I don't want the government issuing any type of mandates for or against. So if a person does kill themselves and people and neighbors notice the body and call the coroners, that's his business, and that's an inconvenience the neighbors can hoop and holler about, but they'll forget about it in a, you know, well, maybe they won't forget about it, but it won't affect their lives.
I love your casual attitude in addressing such questions.
I'm very cut and dry.
that's one thing we've definitely learned about you. So let me ask you, let me see if I can throw a little bit of a monkey wrench in the framework that you're sort of posting for us. What if a person isn't psychologically sound? What if, you know, think of like the sanitariums of old. I think that's what they're called, right? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But let's just imagine, though, that we find someone who's addicted to a drug and we realize very quickly, look, this person is, you know, totally insane.
Mm-hmm.
What about at that point, you know, do we have an obligation or do we have, you know, possibly maybe it's not morally obligatory, but it's morally praiseworthy to, you know, pull this person up by their bootstraps and, you know, run them through rehab or not?
And you're right. If a person wants to, they can intervene as long as the other person allows it. Now, you bring up a good point because it was more than a few years ago there, I think it was an ACLU had sued, I think it was New York State or New York City, because under that current mayor's administration, he was trying to round up homeless people. And people couldn't understand why the ACLU was interfering with that. And they were saying at the time, I wasn't, you know, investigating it too much at the time. I wasn't really politically active at the time. But they were saying that even though what the cops were doing and the supposed intention of the rounding up was supposedly good, it could lead to government corruption and government overreaching the boundaries. So if a person who isn't with the government wants to try to help somebody, you know, raise them up by the bootstraps, as it were, then let them. But if the other person who is mentally out of it says no, the other person doesn't have a moral obligation, even though it is morally laudable to do it. But nobody has an obligation, and nobody should condemn another person if they don't want to step in.
Okay.
Well,
I was going to kind of go on another tangent, perhaps, and I don't know, you may have answered it with that, but what about an individual who gets behind a car drunk, hurts others, thus, you know, some government services intervene, they throw the guy in jail? Should the job of what the government's doing be to cure the fundamental problem, you know, say this guy is a real bad alcoholic, or just to punish the guy, send him on his way, and then he continues to go out and harm people? So it seems to suggest that it should be trying to address the problem of alcoholism and, you know, thereby kind of limiting the liberty of individuals to reach such a point or is that maybe too much of a stretch?
Well, okay, there's Mike. Do you want to answer that? Or?
I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel. I think that, you know, as an American, my views are very similar to yours, Joe, in that I have this conception that, you know, what a person does behind closed doors is largely untouchable. You know, it's just sort of my view of privacy and liberty and the like. But I don't know, you know, if I can come up with a sound, objective argument for that. I think it's just, you know, a result of the culture in which I was raised and born.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm really not sure on an individual. I do believe that in the state of Michigan, I don't know about, you know, New York or other states, but I do believe in the state of Michigan, you know, if you are convicted of driving under the influence, even without harming anyone, you do have to go through, like, AA and sort of corrective processes. Whether or not that's right, I'm not sure what the duty of the state should be in that situation. I don't know.
Okay. The person who's driving, they are harming others. It's no longer within the safety of their own house. So they have a responsibility towards other people if they're drunk and driving with a car, which is now a murder machine. Now, the police should intervene because supposedly we're hiring them to do something like that. Whether or not the courts, which again is the government, has the right to try to rehabilitate on its face, it sure sounds good, doesn't it? But the government, in reality, will take any good fruit and turn it into a rotten fruit. So, just to make sure that the government stays out of it, I would rather they just throw the person in jail and then leave it at that, let them come out, and then leave it up to us to realize that there are drunk drivers on the highway, and we have a responsibility to ourselves to drive defensively. Two to three car lengths behind. If you notice swerving, you move into another lane, or you drive further back. So, again, the question would be, does the government have the right to rehabilitate? So that's what I think the question was leading to.
Yeah, that's exactly where I think the question was leading to. And you seem to have, like, a negative idea, you know, with government rehabilitative services. And I was wondering why you have that, why you hold that.
Well, Mike, you want to answer, or do you want me to go after me, or what?
Well, I think that, I don't know if I can assume the words of Joe while he's on the air, but I think where you're coming from is sort of leave it to the government to muck it up. While it might seem like, you know, a great idea to have Alcoholics Anonymous required or some other rehabilitative service through the government, one might also say, you know, they're overreaching their bounds there, you know, that they're enforcing something or creating a positive duty, which isn't theirs to create. That's, they're somehow infringing our liberties by doing this. Or they could even make things worse, you know. Maybe rehab becomes a joke because it's government-run or something of that nature. Again, you know, I'm really not sure. It could be a question of results, but I think the more important question here is the question of the law. You know, what should the purpose of government be? To sort of oversee, to police, or to regulate? You know, I think it's somewhere in that perspective. Which, I don't know. I think that's where we're headed, though. Was there something you wanted to add to that, Joe, or something I got wrong?
Oh, yeah. He was asking me, where did I come up with these ideas about, you know, government being negative. Well, there's a history of, I do research on government. I'm somewhat politically active, and the history of government is, to say the least, atrocious. I actually would want to curse, but I don't think Mike wants me to curse on this show. But it doesn't matter what government does, because whatever it does, it will F it up. A good book for the caller to read, which is free, because I have a libertarian perspective on it, and it's called Why Government Doesn't Work by Harry Brown. And you can put that in Google, And if they still have it available, it should pop up within the first three or four websites, and you can download it as a PDF. And it talks about unintended consequences, which, from my research, isn't even unintended anymore. The government wants to assume control. So what it does through incremental means is to pass laws which seem good, and then use those laws as precedent for them to gain even more control over our liberties. So that's why I'm against government.
So you're saying if the government were to take up these rehabilitative responsibilities, then all of a sudden it's going to gradually give them more and more power to infringe on our rights as they kind of keep using this as a sort of excuse, saying, well, we need to protect you from such and such, therefore we need to implement this and that.
Exactly.
Is that a fair
exactly.
analysis?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, the question, I guess the follow-up question to this is, okay, so the government, not so good in handling issues such as these, but provided that, you know, let's say your dad was an extreme alcoholic, or my dad was an extreme alcoholic, and, you know, got behind the wheel of a car, killed a bunch of people, was, you know, still on the drink after that, and even when he got out of jail, yada, yada, and you felt compelled to start some sort of program for yourself to allow people to, I guess, to try to rehabilitate people as a kind of social private business. Do you feel that changes the fundamentals of the kind of taking away from the liberties of others by kind of offering this program that, I guess, people socially encourage other people to go into if they see that problem existing?
No, because I'm not the government. If I voluntarily create a program and other people want to join as a result of my being influenced by my alcoholic father, there's no governmental influence. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I feel compelled to share. I just had a thought. You've probably heard of it. There's a short story from the 1970s, I think, by Kurt Vonnegut, who's a favorite author of mine, called Harrison Bergeron. And I think it's basically a tale along the lines of something Joe is thinking. And just a short little summary of the story. Basically, it's a government is the future, which is, as Joe has said, incrementally been assuming control, you know, regulating things like drugs on up, you know, taking away rights to privacy, all under the guise of protecting people or, you know, somehow assisting in the flourishing of people. And what ends up happening, it's kind of an interesting little bit, is people who have high IQs start becoming, like, hampered by, like, little doohickeys that put off shotgun shells in their ears. They can't think clearly. Or people, you know, who can dance well have to wear, like, weights around their feet. It's an interesting story, and, of course, very sarcastic and tongue-in-cheek. But I think that is kind of one of the potential dangers that Joe is pointing to. But I guess I'd even like to broaden the question a little bit. You know, we seem very interested in the propensity of drug use to cause harm in others and, you know, sort of what duty the government should have to clean that up. But I think we see lots, you know, whether we have good rational reasons for it or not, we see lots of other negative effects of drug use as well, right? I mean, Joe might not, but when I see a person, you know, who drops out of high school and, you know, becomes very ingrained with a marijuana-led lifestyle and, you know, really, let's say, lives off welfare or something like that, I'm tempted to, you know, sort of think that there's something wrong with that, you know, that that's somehow inherently wrong. Now, Joe might say no, or perhaps Joe might go into an angry tirade about welfare. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what I was thinking, too, yeah.
But there seem to be other problems, too, just then, I mean, personal issues other than the propensity to cause damage to others. I mean, the fact that, you know, I'm just thinking of some of the more volatile drugs, your cocaine, your acid, those sorts of things. You know, we seem to think that they're bad because they can literally kill you, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's like recreational drug use gone bad.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come from? I mean, just a human interest in self-preservation? Why do we have all these intuitions about drugs? Sorry, I just kind of completely switched gears.
Does the caller want to answer, or I can go after him?
Nicole. Joe, go ahead.
Okay. first off, yeah, we have personal responsibility, which is part of our liberties. It doesn't mean, though, that people know how to take care of those responsibilities in a responsible way. There will be problems. At the same time, the government should not interfere. So, yeah, Mike, you're right. I mean, there will be people who, for whatever reason, will continue with the lifestyle and crawl up the ladder, as it were, to go from marijuana to cocaine to, you know, dropping out of society to perhaps being on welfare. Yeah, welfare is part of the problem, but the guy who has the personal liberty to do what he wants to do doesn't mean that he's got the brains to do it well. So if he suffers the consequences, then he suffers the consequences. Now, welfare is a part of the nanny state. That's the government. Government should stay out of it. If the person needs help, and if the government stays out of it, a vacuum will be created, which will be filled by philanthropic organizations and synagogues and churches and mosques and the Salvation Army and Goodwill, etc. So he has a responsibility to be a responsible person, meaning not to impose his stupidity on other people. But if he's going to be an idiot, then the government still should not intervene other than to punish a person who breaks a rational law, not just the law, a rational law, and then leave it at that. But if the government could fulfill its supposed obligation, which 90% of the Americans believe the government has in trying to protect us from everything, if they could do it well, then I wouldn't object, even though it might be against somebody's interpretation of the Constitution, because we could always amend the Constitution as long as the government's doing it well. But the government never does anything well.
Well, at least you're consistent, Joe. We actually have another caller, so we'll go ahead and let them on the air and see what they can add to the conversation. Caller, welcome to the show.
They're listening on speakers, I presume, until they find out they're on.
We've got the delay on the switchboard over the computers.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Hello there, you who has the sound effects of the beach. Okay.
Okay, well, hopefully figure out the technical difficulties there, and our caller joins us. But was there something you wanted to add to that? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I was just going to kind of pose a hypothetical. Suppose then that we make all these, as you call them, I think, serious drugs, you know, cocaine, acid, heroin even, allow these things to be completely legal. You can go pick them up in a store, do them in some sort of environment that is allowed, I guess. You know, that I think that would still be allowing people the right to do it, meanwhile still somewhat controlling it. Do you think that people, given these liberties, I know this is complete speculation, so maybe I'll just put in like an idea of what I think would happen. So supposing you allow these things to go legal and all these people end up taking it, death rates rise dramatically, birth rates fall, people are just basically killing themselves off. I guess natural selection's back in order. I guess what I see eventually happening is that after that cooled off, then people would start realizing, okay, doing these drugs obviously it was a very dangerous path to go down, therefore I won't do it, and then they end up back into it. I would see that first generation of where all these liberties were given to people, they would be losing them, things would happen. And is that okay to do, to just allow people to kind of wither away for the benefit of posterity's sake, I guess?
I think Joe's tempted to agree with you. Am I right?
I was waiting for your comments, Mike. Okay. Yeah, let people wither away. Again, other people, you know, there are neighbors, there are friends, there are relatives. If they want to intervene, let them intervene. If the person allows it, then it's all well and good. Government's out of it, then the people have their own personal drama that they can deal with. If the self-inflicted victim doesn't want other people to intervene, then if he withers away, that's his choice, and people can find him dead in his apartment. That's his problem. That's the neighbor's problem, as you know, as far as that goes. But if you have the government intervening, you've got millions and billions of dollars being poured into the war on drugs, the war on terror, the war on war against illiteracy. Now we have the war on obesity. No.
Okay, well, I see what you're saying about the war on obesity. I get where you're coming from. And I'm not sure I feel this way, but I'll just go ahead and play devil's advocate since I've been wishy-washy thus far and say that, you know, listen here, you know, the government has a duty to protect us from all threats, foreign and domestic, and it just so happens that drug use by naive individuals is a imminent threat that will lead to the downfall of our nation, so they have a duty to protect us from destroying ourselves. I'm pretty sure I don't feel that way, but let's just say I used a perspective like that. You don't think there's any way I could justify that? It'd be interesting to see on a survey how people felt about that. I think most would be inclined to say no, you know, let the individual wither away or let the individual do what they will. But, you know, you could put a spin on it. Maybe there's some sickness going around like that. What was that?
Swine?
Happening, I think it was, that Stephen King film where everybody started offing themselves because of an airborne pathogen. I don't know.
Probably
that
American Idol.
Argument being made to that effect. Sorry, go ahead.
I said probably American Idol.
Yeah, pretty sure that wasn't it. But,
oh, okay.
Nice try. I think it was called, like, The Happening or something like that. Or I think the storyline went that we were somehow damaging the environment, so the environment was fighting back by forcibly making us commit suicide or something like that.
No, I don't remember. I know the title, I think, The Happening. I thought it was a werewolf thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was with Jack Nicholson. Yeah, that's right. In the movie.
To be entirely honest, I'm not sure that's the one I was thinking of. We have another caller, so we'll let them on the air and see what they say. Caller, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I can. We're happy to have you.
Oh, I know who that is.
Okay, first of all, Wolf is the movie with Jack Nicholson.
What about Jack Nicholson?
The movie is Wolf.
No. That was The Happening. It was a Stephen King film back in the late 70s. Where remember the scene? Here's Johnny.
No, that's The Shining.
The Shining.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm going to kill you. I'm just going to bash your brains in, sir.
Well, as long as you laugh doing it, hope it's okay.
So, I'm sorry to detract away from the great movies and the men who've made them conversation, but I want to go back to the claim about government ruins everything, and it's a straying away from the drug prong of the conversation, but this is just a question for Joe. Joe, when you say that
are you talking from a bathtub or something? Because you sound
you're the one with the seashore in the background.
I have a little bit of feedback, but you too. You have that bathtub.
No, I'm like totally clear, like digital baby.
Okay, Michael, other caller, verify this for me.
Wait, do I sound weird?
Yeah, you sound like
you. I refuse to mediate.
I'm speaking into a headset.
Yeah. Oh, no wonder.
Oh man. Okay. Well, anyway. At one point you said that government encroaches upon our liberty. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, like you bashing my head in. Blah blah blah.
And I just want to say, by government, are you equating that with? Do you think that the Supreme Court, that is the United States Supreme Court, is the government, or do you think that they're separate from the government?
Well, in effect, it's the government because it makes the rulings which the government has to follow.
Right. So I thought you would say that, which is why, and I'm sorry if I sound like I'm in an echo chamber. I've never had this problem before. But
you must be on drugs.
Probably. My own natural drugs, I would say.
Yeah,
but
I
would say actually the Supreme Court has stepped in, you know, a couple of times to actually protect the control of state governments onto the lives of the individual citizens. For example, in the case Griswold versus Connecticut, the state of Connecticut criminalized the use of contraception for preventing pregnancy. Now, you could buy contraception for the prevention of disease, but you cannot buy contraception to prevent pregnancy, regardless of whether you were married or unmarried. And the Supreme Court rightfully stepped in and said, well, that's just wrong because there's a right to privacy, although not explicitly stated in the Constitution, that that Connecticut is violating. And also with the right to an abortion, the government said, in this case, Texas is stepping into this area of privacy, which is reserved for this very important decision, whether or not to have go through with the pregnancy. So I just want to challenge your claim that all the time the government is chipping away at our liberty, and one could interpret certain cases as actually protecting individuals from the hegemony of the state and its tyranny sometimes.
Well, if the little state can be tyrannical, think about what the big boy can do.
Oh, no, I agree. And I'm not saying it can't, but I'm saying that there's, you know, moments where it doesn't. But I do agree, and I think that when we're talking about drug use and rehabilitation, I know that here in Michigan, as Mike was saying, you do have, you know, people who are sentenced to go to AA, for example, in drug court. And so you have the quote-unquote state, which is the court, saying to the person, you will go to AA. But AA is like, whatever, a civil society, nonprofit, so on and so forth type of organization. So the government can have a role in saying, look, you need to go to these, like you, Joe, you were talking about the charities and religious organizations, and government can have a role in sending people, and indeed they do this in Michigan, to those organizations for the purpose of being rehabilitated. But I would also say, even more skeptical, that even these, and I know, Joe, you have a beef with the Catholic Church, that even these so-called philanthropic organizations can also be prone to the corruption of power and losing sight of the big picture and so forth. So I think the problem is a human problem, and it's not like the government per se, but it's like people are the problem. That's all I'm going to say.
That's all you want to say?
Yeah, for now. Since I sound like I'm talking from a tunnel, I should keep it short, right?
You catch on.
So, yeah,
Mike,
that's
you want to answer those issues that she threw out there, or do you want me to go ahead?
Well, I think one point that we've been, I think this has already been covered a little bit, but that we've been covering with particularity, is that it's a question of liberty, really. You know, what the state is protecting, what the state is not protecting. You know, Joe seems to think that, you know, we all have this right to do whatever we want behind closed doors. I tend to agree. This question of protection of us, or, you know, whether or not the state is somehow infringing on us by protecting us from ourselves, really boils down to a question of liberty, which I think is pretty inherent in the Constitution, right? 14th Amendment, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, etc. I know Nick had some specific thoughts he wanted to cover on this issue, but I think very inherent to this conversation of drugs is our conception of liberty. I feel like there's some John Stuart Mill to be said here.
Well, I definitely think liberty is at the heart of kind of what the issue with the drugs is, and what was interesting about Joe's first comment was he basically outlined what Mill's conception of liberty was. I mean, let everybody do basically whatever they want so long as they're not hurting anybody else. Now, you know, identifying exactly what hurt can be, I think, can be troublesome. But I do want to jump real back to Hope's point about that it's not so much because I guess I was trying to. I think that's a very good answer to Joe's point about the government's kind of always screwing it up, and it seems to be the case that it's not always government that's screwing up, rather it's people that it's always screwing it up. And I would even go a step further to say that it seems like once people reach a position of authority or power on such a large scale that it becomes problematic. When one individual can make a decision that will affect, let's say, millions, I think that is a very scary environment, and I think no individual should have that much power. But even big businesses and things of that nature, I think, can reach that level of where they can make decisions that will affect a large number of people. And so I guess I just want to agree with Hope on that and kind of re-accent that point and say that, yes, it seems to be a human problem, but the human problem seems to be facilitated by the use of power. And so I was just wondering if there's any comments on that, and perhaps power is just something I made up in my mind that is causing, is the kind of finger to point at.
Well, if you really want to see power run amok, you should see Hope when she co-hosts the show.
That's not nice.
I was teasing. I mean, bashing in my head. Hey, that was nice.
No,
but getting back to what Mike was saying, nobody really answered his question. I'll get to, then I can get to Hope. Is that Mike was asking if the government had the responsibility to protect us from all threats, foreign and domestic, how would that be? Now, let's assume that they actually do have that power with relation to drugs or anything. If they were doing a good job, nobody would care. But they're not doing a good job. And Joe and now Nick and Hope know my views on that. Getting back to what Hope said, it's a people thing? Absolutely. But when you have people, as Nick was saying, if you have a bunch of people gathered together having power, forget about it. Okay? So when you have that, you can't allow it. You shouldn't allow it. But, the state of affairs that we have today, we really don't have much of a choice unless we vote out the bums and put in the right, vote out all the bums, Democrats and Republicans. But personal liberty carries with the responsibility. People don't carry the responsibility well. Keep government out of it and let other people intervene. And in terms of, again, government precedent, the government... the case that Hope was referring to, I'm not familiar with it, but if it did, let's say it did do, for the sake of argument, something which was good. It intervened. Oh, you caught that subtle thing, huh? Okay.
I was laughing before, but do I sound clearer now? Because I'm on a cell phone now. I'm calling
right.
into a different one.
Oh, it sounds
so
better.
When you were bashing me, okay,
uh-huh.
I wasn't there to defend myself, but anyway.
Oh, well, I know that the fun was wrecked, but... But take a look at the president now about sexting. How if kids take, for example, pictures of themselves and they're underage kids, let's say 12 or 13, and this is a real case. I think it was in Pennsylvania. Kids are taking pictures of themselves nude at a slumber party. Their friends, male friends, got a hold of the pictures and then they sexted. They texted to other friends, so they were sexting. Now, the prosecutor comes in and not only wants to prosecute the kids, the male kids, for sexting, for sending around nude photos of underage kids, but he now wants to force the kids who were photographed, the girls, they're around 12, 11, 13, anyway, they were minors, and he wants to force them to take a class in learning how to be responsible teens. And the mother sued and won, saying the state had no right to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying is that the case that you had mentioned, let's say it was a good case, okay?
Yeah.
But the precedent is that the government will take something good and bastardize it and use it against people.
No, I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying there are these... In fact, I agree... I'm just pointing out some cases that could argue for the converse. But I agree, and it's very hard, you know, going back to this point about the individual and Now, feel free if you think that I'm usurping the conversation to just say stop. But, but Plato, over 2,000 years ago, in a very important book, The Republic, talks about the influence of the mob, the majority, the unenlightened, on the average person, and in particular on the average young person who is full of talent and brilliance and so forth. And it's extremely difficult for one to withstand that tidal wave of influence and emotion. And this has always been a problem. And, you know, it's like the job, I think, of us, humanity that is to try as best we can to make as many people like that. And can government do it? Back in that day, they said yes. I mean, you were talking about a much smaller governmental entity. We're not talking about the federal government. I'm not even talking about a state, but, you know, of the polis. But in their view, that was the job of the government, that they could do it, that that's what education was about. And in my experience, however scant, I do see, you know, groups and also working in like public some public schools, for instance, in Colorado, that are taking this charge, doing what they can for the few years that they have the children. But my point being is that this has always been a problem, and it's also, I believe, why Machiavelli wrote The Prince, because he realized that this was always a problem in the public arena, and that if you do want to be a, quote, great man, you have to reckon with some forces that may cause you to do things that, you know, the ideal self would cringe upon. But, no, I think this has always been a problem, and I think it's good to have people who keep you honest. And the fact of the matter is, as Socrates' story tells us, people don't want that. They'll actually go so far as to put you on trial and kill you if you force people to be honest.
There's a moral for the story of Socrates, if I ever heard one.
But I think it's always been a problem, and that's all I'm saying. But there are these moments where there's these moments of light. You do see something, there's some sort of alignment of stars or whatever, and something does happen that's correct. Now, of course, the case that I'm mentioning to some people think it's the government being too controlling, because what they're doing is they're telling a state what it can do. So they're telling Connecticut what it can do. And the Connecticut legislature was like, hey, we should be able to do what we want. But at least in constitutional law and the debates involved therein, the debate is about whether we're concerned primarily with the autonomy of the state or the autonomy of the individual. And you have different philosophical positions on that question. Sorry.
Right. No, it's okay. Very central. We actually have yet another caller, so I think I'll give them one last chance to see if they can derail our conversation anymore. Caller, welcome to the show. Hello there.
Yeah, the delay on the
speaker. We seem to be having issues. I'm not sure what it is, but there's some sort of massive delay between the time we let someone on the air and when they can talk. But I just wanted to ask, sort of rewind the conversation a bit. It doesn't seem to me, you know, we're discussing possibly deregulating drug use, either to protect the rights of the individual or, you know, to sort of clarify our conception of liberty or something to this effect. It doesn't seem to be the case to me that, you know, even recreational drug use need be bad. I mean, clearly we want to say there are good drugs. I don't think anybody would say, you know, aspirin is the sort of drug that we, you know, need to be having like a Aspirin Users Anonymous for. I mean, there can be certainly good drugs. But I guess I want to ask the harder question about, like, what about someone who, you know, let's say has a joint once a week after a hard week of work to settle down, you know, an illegal drug for our intents and purposes, but, you know, uses it in a responsible, possibly even benevolent fashion. To me, I think that's pretty central to this question. we're talking about, you know, the government protecting us from ourselves, or, as Hope said, you know, protecting their own autonomy or protecting our autonomy, which is it? I think the what should come into play that perhaps doesn't is the potential for these sorts of things to be used well. I think this is sort of where the NRA doesn't want to go, the National Rifle Association, when people say guns kill people. Well, you know, they respond, well, no, guns don't kill people. Irresponsible gun users kill people. Like, it can be potentially dangerous, but at the same time, you know, we give our police force weapons. So I think I'd like to make a parallel with drugs and see if I can do it. You know, things like cocaine, I could see potentially being used for good. I mean, originally, cocaine was a remedial medicine, right? And then a recreational drink and now an illegal drug that kills people. But, I mean, does that come into play at all, the possibility of these things to be used? Or I should say, these things don't inherently need to be used for ill, I think. Is that worth considering? I mean, there's nothing about, I don't think, marijuana that's inherently bad. It's when we use it and sort of derail our life and possibly hurt people that it becomes damaging. Should that be a factor, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
Well, civil liberties always has to be a factor when using drugs in today's society. So if you're using drugs only once a week, and you, regardless whether you're hurting somebody, hurting yourself, and not hurting anybody at all, then the question of, does the government have the right to invade our privacy?
Right.
So if you're...
Simply because there's the potential for damage.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not hurting anybody, then the government should stay out of it. If you're hurting somebody, then the government should step in to protect other people and, you know, to protect yourself from yourself. When you're engaged in that that injurious activity, I mean, when I say that you're engaged in an activity that actually hurts yourself and another person at the same time. If you're not hurting another person and you're drowning in weed fumes, you know, that's your problem. you know, but... okay, your question is, can it be used for to do something that's not ill for society? Well, let me throw this out there. Let's say somebody has enough money where they can get nothing but high every day. They don't go to work. They don't hurt other people. But they're high every day for 10 years until they die. What's wrong with that?
Well, I might give you some story about, you know, the fact that they're missing the point of human flourishing, that they're not doing anything with their life that, you know, fulfills them, and they're simply seeking... I think I'd probably make a pretty convincing story in that direction. But, you know, from a constitutional legal perspective, you know, I'm not sure that I have a response to that, because although this isn't in our Constitution, as Locke, you know, wanted to say, pursuit of happiness or the ability to pursue happiness as we see fit seems very central to our conception of, you know, liberty, the ability to do whatever it is that, you know, makes us, that makes our motor run. So I think I might say that from an ethical perspective or a moral perspective, that person is at the very least a moral vacuum. You know, they're very self-fulfilling. And I'd probably want to, you know, give them a good shake and say, look here, buddy, you know, you're not doing anything with any sort of fulfillment. But from a legal perspective, I'm not sure I can say that there's anything wrong with that. It doesn't... I mean, they're not contributing to society, but... Go ahead.
I know that there's only 1 minute left, but I just have to ask the question. On this hypothetical, is the health care reform bill in effect? And if so, are my tax dollars going to pay for this guy's treatment?
Oh, good point.
so I want to ask. With 1 minute left...
Good timing, Hope. You bring up a point which two shows can take care of. If you want to, do it in a minute.
No, I just think that's something to consider. I mean, because, you know, whatever the healthcare bill, however it's implemented, it could be the case that we're subsidizing this behavior.
Well,
and,
that's true. That's true,
and,
but we're not...
In that case, it's not... You know, given what we're saying, there seems to be some tension between, you know, the claim that it's morally right and the fact that we'd be subsidizing them. That's it. There's 49 seconds left, so I'm being quiet.
Oh.
okay.
To answer your question, very simply, unless Nick or Mike want to go in there?
Go ahead.
Okay. To subsidize anybody, no. Government should stay out of it. Plain and simple. So,
okay.
That's it.
You know, I thought you would say that.
Okay. Don't answer your hypothetical, no. Your tax
yeah.
This has been Ethics Talk. We hope this has been a good conversation about drugs and liberty. It made you think. We'll possibly look at a follow-up show in the future on liberty and such topics. Thank you for joining us. We hope you'll tune in next week, whatever show we might come up with, and have a wonderful evening.
All right,
bye,
take
thanks.
Care, people.
Good
bye.
Night.
Bye-bye.